You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
This is the Belief in the Magic podcast, as presented by LastWordOnSports.com, where you get the last word. I'm Oscar Elliott.
And I'm Christian Holmes.
And today we've got a few games to talk about. The series that is happening.
Yeah. You know what? If we were talking about the first two, I don't think we would be having this conversation. I don't think the lead fans would want to hear it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I guess the third game, our Stager game last night, was pretty intense. You know, good game for the Leeds. Oscar, how do you feel about the first three games of the series?
First one, I was very unhappy about. Second one, I was unable to watch it, unfortunately. Or fortunately, depending on how you look at it. Because I would not want to see them get slaughtered like that.
But yeah, I don't blame you.
And this game, I saw the second and third period of the win.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was, like, I tuned in right at the Chara goal. I thought it was quite a good game from that point on.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's saying how they think Freddy should have had those goals.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see the first one, but the Chara one, I can't fault you too much on that. Like, people are saying it's a soft goal. It went up, hit his mask in the, like, crazy little piece of space that he was giving up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what would you rather do? Have his head there so he's giving up space down low, or relinquish that little bit of space up top?
That's actually...
That nine times out of ten, that doesn't go in.
Mm-hmm. That's actually a really good point, because, you know, I just think, in a way, like, if you listen to the CDC broadcast, the announcers were all trying to make, like, oh, Chara perfectly placed that shot. That's a goal scorer's goal. And, you know, that you just don't, like you said, 9 out of 10 times, you don't see that happen usually. And, you know.
Like, if it's Steven Stamkos scoring that goal, then, yeah, maybe you should try and cover up even more space than you did, because it's Steven Stamkos, elite sniper. But with Zdeno Chara, there's no way that you would expect that to come from him. And even if it was Steven Stamkos, that's still a pretty nicely placed shot. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? It was a worthy goal. I know nobody really likes to see those types of goals, because, you know, it's deflating, especially coming from a guy like Zdeno Chara. Like, you'd rather not see that guy score that goal. But if that's really the only thing you have to complain about from last night's game being Monday's game, by the time you hear this, it'll probably be Wednesday. But yeah, if that's all you really got to complain about, you know. Like, the first two games, though, you know, I think there is a massive improvement on the lead score check. And, you know, if you think about it, like, if you look at the third game last night, like, they played all year. And a team that used their speed and their skill to get ahead of, you know, some of the more physical teams. And as we know, Boston's a great team when it comes to cycling the puck. They're specifically good in cycling the puck in and around the net and getting the puck in front of the net. So they're basically one of the best lines in the lead. Pasternak, Marchand, and Bergeron, not in order, can go and get their goals. And I thought, you know, the Maple Leafs shut them down quite well last night. And who would have thought Mike Babcock would have put a guy we probably would have been making fun of 3 months ago, Thomas Lekanen, on the second line to face him. You gotta give Kapanic credit. He played great in Lightning.
Oh, he did a great job last night, and I saw lots of people tweeting saying like, this is the night that Thomas Kapanic became a Leaf and stuff like that. And earlier today, I was like, we're just saying how monstrous that top line is for Boston. I was just looking at the 2015 draft earlier today. That's the year that Boston picked three in a row. And so far, those three aren't looking too good. It's Jake DeBrusque, and Zaboril, I believe, is another one. And let me find it here.
Wasn't the other guy like a Boston College guy?
Oh, hold on. Seniashin. I don't even know how to pronounce that. Zaboril, DeBrusque, and Seniashin.
You're right there.
The three players picked right after that. Imagine the Bruins team with Barzal, Kyle Connor, and Thomas Chabot.
Oh my goodness. That would be...
Like, they could have had every single one of those players instead.
Mm-hmm.
And then Brock Besser later on, Travis Konecny. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a... They could have made that draft so lethal for them, having a three picks in a row in the McDavid draft. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Jake DeBrusque had a pretty good rookie season.
Yeah, he did. You can't complain.
But if they had Matthew Barzal.
Why would I?
Centering Kyle Connor and Charlie McAvoy and Thomas Chabot on defense.
Ooh, that scares me.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, they get first in the East, not just in the Atlantic, in the whole entire Eastern Conference, easy.
Well, yeah, like, because you'd have Barzal... Like, you could split up the Pastrnak, Marchand, and Bergeron line and have Pastrnak, Barzal, and Connor, and then Rick Nash, and Patrice Bergeron, and Brad Marchand on the top line if you wanted.
That's filthy, honestly. But that's what happens when you have a rookie GM, Don Sweeney, drafting that year. Maybe he didn't really have a great grasp of
it could have been so lethal.
Mm-hmm.
Even more so.
Yeah, even more so. Because, like, I don't even think Toronto would have been in this series if that was the case. But,
yeah.
You never know. Like, you know, everything happens for a reason. Maybe Matthew Barzal didn't turn out to be a stud, you know? So, yeah. like, it all depends.
I forget who it was, but someone had him going first overall over Connor McDavid that year. It was a very bold prediction, but redrafted, he'd be up in the top five, definitely.
Yeah.
Even in just one year.
Mm-hmm. I think that was Steve Simmons that said that, or some idiot like that. Wouldn't be surprised.
But anyways, I just thought that was kind of cool, kind of funny.
Kind of cool, yeah.
But now the Nazem Kadri, we're not hoping to spend too much time on this, but...
Mm-hmm. Not too much.
Something that you kind of have to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Just a dumb hit.
I definitely agree.
Like, I get what he was trying to do. He's trying to defend Marner and everything, and... I'm glad they have that sort of locker room bond, but pick your moments. You're down in a playoff game. At that point, I think it was 3-1 still. So it's still within your reach. Don't take a stupid penalty. And don't... I know Wingles went down a little after he started the hit, but I feel like there was some time to stop there.
I do agree with that, because like here's my thing with the hit. I don't think it was a smart hit, and you know what? If he was like up, standing up, It wouldn't have been as bad. It still would have been really bad.
But it would have been a questionable hit, even if he was standing up.
Yeah, but
my guess is he would have caught him in the back or something.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was just a vengeful hit.
Mm-hmm. It definitely was. But this is my only complaint with the suspension. They deserved what he got, kind of. But
I think if, as long as the NHLPA, or not the NHL, yeah.
Players department.
The safety department. As long as they take that and they run with it, and they keep enforcing heavier suspensions to deter all this and really make a statement of it, I am perfectly okay with 3 games. If they mess it up and then fine Brad Marchand $5,000 again, then maybe I'm not. But as long as they do right by it, I am perfectly okay with the 3-game suspension.
Now, this is my take, too. I think there's a lot of stuff that's been happening. There's been a lot of questionable hits that should have been suspensions. If you're suspending guys like Kadri for his and Downey for his hit, there's a few suspensions, I think, that should have been made, that weren't made. And it kind of disappoints me because, I don't think any player should be able to just go and, tile drive a guy without the puck when he's defenseless and not face repercussions if that's the way they want to handle guys like Nazem Kadri sit on Wiggles or something like that.
Yeah, and I agree. It's just as long as they are taking this playoffs to send a message now saying okay, we know we messed up previously by not handing out suspensions for this, this, and this, and we're going to be cracking the whip now. Get ready. And as long as they're keeping up with all that and keeping it consistent from this point forward in terms of the Kadri and Doughty hits, I think it's for the best and for what's good for the sport.
And here's another criticism I have. Now, I don't think Don Cherry might tell you it's because of the instigator rule, but I think it's just hockey's gone soft in a way. I think, and there's no, one of our editors, Deeker, that's his nickname, he has this theory that there's no statistical evidence saying that if you had fighting in the game, that tough guys would be able to stop these injuries from happening. And to that point, I do agree. But my point is, and I'm kind of, old school when it comes to this, is if you had guys, like let's say a Ty Domi, that could come out onto the ice and protect your star players if somebody does choose to take a run at them and drop the gloves and, give the guy that thinks it's all right to Graham, one of your best players, into the board, a good shake-up. I think that would be the appropriate thing to do because I think, in a way, this is how you stop injuries such as concussions and stuff like that because you put respect back into the game. Because if you watch the game right now, I feel there's no respect. And you know what? It's playoff hockey. Players hit. And I get that in the whole deal. You're supposed to hit. That's basically how the game's supposed to go. But I think, for all the sweethearts, you can call them that. So I call them pesky liberals. I know we're not supposed to get political. But people that aren't really into that thing, I don't think they understand that side of the game. Because if you know a guy is going to come after you take that shot at a star player on their team. How likely are you to do it? You're not that likely. Not everybody's a Scott Stevens type, the guy that will go and take a shot at Eric Lindros and drop the gloves afterwards. Because most of the guys in today's league are like Claude Lemieux. They just hurdle up after they go and lay out big hits. And like his hit on Chris Drury, that's a good example. He just like, when it came time to get some payback, he just hurdled up in a ball and he was basically a rat. And like I know this is a rant and I apologize for that, but that's just the way I was brought up. I was always brought up like back in Fergus, we had the Center Wellington Fusion. I used to watch them a lot because a lot of my buddies played on the team. And they were a tough physical team. You messed with them, you got the bull by its horns. Whether it was a guy coming and taking a shot at you or it was a guy dropping his mitts, you knew there was retaliation coming.
See, this is where I might disagree with you. I get what you're saying. Like, you want to have guys with the intimidation factor out there to fight and to deter. I just don't think it works like that anymore unless it's a guy who can score. Because if you look at Matt Martin, he's never going to be out on the ice at the same time as Austin Matthews. He's rarely out on the ice, period. And I am perfectly... I'm actually kind of a hypocrite for saying this because I used to be the guy to stand up for my teammates and stuff like that. I'm a bigger guy. Not with the most hockey skill, but like if a guy runs my goalie, I'm getting in his face. But I am happy that the game is going away with it a little. Just because it's still at a risk for concussions when you're fighting, and we can't unlearn what we already know about concussions. As long as the refs keep doing their job, which hasn't been the case as much lately, as long as the refs keep doing their jobs and penalizing dirty hits, you don't need a guy to fight anymore. You don't need to take the dirty hits like Kadri did. Yeah, that's my stance on it. I think as long as the refs are calling the penalties, you don't need an enforcer and you don't need to take dirty revenge hits.
I kind of get where you're coming from. I'm not disagreeing with you because it's a different perspective and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, but, for sure.
But my biggest issue with the referees right now is they got their heads in between their asses and they don't really, like, their head up their ass would be the proper English way to say it. Although, yeah. Some people may say to excuse your French. But,
go for it.
Yeah, I don't know. It just pisses me off because I don't like seeing that happen, whether it's with my team or the other team. And if the responsibility lies on the referee to police the game and they're not policing the game, then that's when things get out of control and you see things like that. And like you were saying, yeah, a guy like Matt Martin, you never see him on the ice. And you might not be able to go back to the 70s where you had the Broad Street Bullies and a very tough team in Boston. And Toronto had their tough guys. Montreal had their tough guys, although you would kind of think stereotypically they wouldn't.
They got Brendan Gallagher, Andrew Shaw.
I don't like where the NHL's at right now with that. I think, as you said, the referees aren't doing the greatest job right now, and that's the biggest issue. But I just think, like, if you have the tough guy out there, even if he can't play hockey, you know, even if you have him on the fourth line, you know. But then again, it's a balance, and really, like you said, it's leaning its way out, so I don't think the tough guy is coming back. But
yeah, the reffing has been rough lately, but I think instead of taking this into your own hands like Kadri did, I think you just as much as you might hate it and feel awful inside about it, I think you just got to roll with it and keep playing.
Yeah.
Because that's what's going to be best for your team. And if, say, Marner does get injured, of course that is awful. Then they will face likely suspension themselves, like Wingles would, if Marner had, say, gotten hurt or face a penalty or something. I think you just got to roll with it. I totally get what you're saying, and it's definitely tempting to do that. Like, I've been tempted to do that before. I have done that before, but or not hit the guy and hit head into the boards, but like stood up for my teammates. And yeah, I think you just got to roll with it at that point. It's nothing beneficial you can do.
Yeah. Like, Karna's a bitch. That's another, like, that's, like, basically what you're saying. Like, Karna handle it, which definitely just roll with it.
But yeah, Kadri shouldn't have hit the guy even if he felt it was unjust. Like, Mitch can roll with it. As small of a guy as he is, he's still a hockey player. Hockey players are tough people, unless you're Joffrey Lupul. And then,
good one.
Like, talk to the ref afterwards, I guess. But I seriously think they got to stop taking it into their own hands. And they're doing away with the enforcer, which I agree with. I think they need to talk about this at the next GM's meeting, though. So about the reffing, and talk to the ref association and talk to the NHLPA.
I'm definitely with you on that, because as soon as, like, it's kind of like just in society, too. As soon as you don't properly police society, that's when you start to see riots and stuff like that. The same goes for hockey. Because if the players feel like they have to take it into their own hands and dish out the punishment, that's when you see stuff like Nazem Kadri.
All right. Moving on from the Kadri hit, because that was a lot longer than initially anticipated, but
that's because of my rant.
It's all good. No, we each had some differing opinions there, so that's always good.
That's what makes a good podcast. I hope the listeners agree.
We have a book to talk about, though. We were contacted by a Twitter account. It's called, the Twitter account's Hockeywood Novel, and the writer of that is on this book, I can't actually find his name, J.S. Oppenheim.
Yeah,
he wrote a book called Hockeywood, and it's definitely something everyone that listens should check out. I believe it's a fictional story. Yeah, it's a fictional story about hockey. It's a suspenseful thriller of hockey and family, is the description.
Would you like me to explain further on it, or?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Just stop me at any time if you have any. You have to add something in, or, you know, don't be afraid. So,
sorry, what's that?
I said, if you want to add something in, don't be afraid.
Sounds,
you know,
good.
So basically what this, novel is about is basically, this guy wants to win a Stanley Cup in Toronto, and he's playing for his dad, I believe, and his dad's coaching the Maple Leafs, and he wants to help his dad win the cup. And then, so they're winning the cup, and then, the night before, was it a mob guy, Oscar, somebody from the...
I think it was a gang of some sort, or hold on, I've just got the page open here, and two thugs threatened to kill him.
Okay, two thugs threatened to kill him, and then, like, the night before the Stanley Cup final, somebody gets brain cancer. One of the protagonists, the main character, gets brain cancer.
And yeah, then, it's his father that has brain cancer.
And then they're trying to get win the Stanley Cup. But it sounds...
Win the Stanley Cup for his father. So, because hockey runs in his blood. His dad was a coach for the Toronto Mounties. His oldest son, Mark, who is a number one overall draft pick. And the main character, Ray, who is also known as Hockeywood, just retired from L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of the greatest players of his generation. So he wants to win. He came out of retirement and wants to win the Stanley Cup for his father, who is has terminal brain cancer, terminal cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they're one game away from the Stanley Cup final, he's threatened to be killed if he wins the Stanley Cup for the Toronto Mounties.
All right. So it honestly sounds like a really good book.
Yeah, and, it sounds like it mixes two of my loves, suspense / thriller and hockey. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a read that I'm going to take a look at.
Definitely.
And not only that, but $1 from every sale of the book goes to the charity to end brain cancer to find research. So it's definitely for a great cause, and you get what seems to be a good read out of this. And we'll link the website below at the podcast so you can check it out for yourselves.
Mm-hmm. And we will make sure to get an interview with the author at some point.
We're going to try and have him on the show. He can talk about the book, sort of let you know all about it a lot more than we can. That's something we're going to try and do in the upcoming weeks, hopefully. But in the meantime, you can still download the book before we have him on.
Mm-hmm. And the lovely thing about it is he does have paperback books available if you prefer that method on his website. And if you rather read it on your e-reader, rather that if that's a Kindle or Kudo or whatever you work with, it can be downloaded. And as Oscar said, $1 of that goes to a brain cancer charity, like a research group. I believe it's Seattle-based, but don't take my word on it. I've done some research, and by the way, we did do research. Everything checked out. So it's a great book. And we hope to tell you more about it. Obviously, we don't want to spoil it for you. But
yeah, just sort of giving you the summary that we know that's on the website that you can read for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You guys know as much about us about the book. It's definitely something I'm hoping to read at some point as soon as exams are done.
Yeah, like I would regret it at some point when the guy contacted me. It's just like things are going. You know, we got the podcast. Oh, the FC just scored. The FC just scored. I'm sorry. What's oh my up? God, Jose Altidor. Oh my God. Great internet! Beautiful. I'm sorry.
Okay. What was all that?
I'm watching the FC game. They're in the CONCACAF final or something.
Watching which game, sorry?
The FC game. The Toronto FC. Soccer.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, I just saw that in the corner of my eye. And I'm like, I was going to go to the game tonight. I just never did. Anyhow, back to the podcast. Like, we should speaking of that, we should do, like, a live reaction video, like, to a playoff game or a podcast or something. Just, like, get together, watch a podcast, talk about the game.
Maybe for next season. That'll be easier to set up in the time.
Yeah, because, like, you're busy working. But it's just something maybe the listeners might want to have a say there.
Anyways, yeah, it looks like a great book. Mm-hmm. Definitely something everyone should check out. It's for a great cause as well.
Mm-hmm. I really like the sound of it. It's basically like, if you ever watch The Goodfellas and you watch hockey, it's like a mixture of both.
Yeah.
Now, is there something else you would like to talk about, sir?
Is there anything you want to bring up? Like, I'm not too sure. What would you like to sort of bring up? I feel like there's something you might like to talk about here.
Well, I don't really have, like, something I do want to talk about, I guess, per se. I guess I could bitch a bit more about how I think I want the top guy in the game. But I do want to say this. My Draken's doing good so far. But this is something interesting. It's hockey related, not really Leafs related. But it kind of feels like the Washington Capitals are like the letdown team this year. The way they've been losing. They lost both of the games they lost were in overtime. And they're down 2-0 to Columbus, which is by no name and no sorts of meaning a bad team. Nick Henderson.
They're up 1-0 right now in midway through the second.
Is that Columbus?
Washington's up right now.
Okay, lovely, lovely.
I don't know. They were coming into this season as they were supposed to be significantly worse than the team that they were last year. Mm-hmm. They still finished atop the Metro. I don't think it's a huge regression. Who's an upcoming free agent for the Capitals? Because I know they had a huge free agency last year. Columbus just scored.
Okay, lovely. Actually, I want Columbus to win tonight just because of my parlay. So, yeah.
Okay, so free agents after this year for Washington, they just have to... it's not too bad. Devontae Smith-Pelly. Mm-hmm. Travis Boyd. Alex Chyson, Jay Beagle, and Tom Wilson on forward.
Yeah.
Then on defense is the John Carlson year. So.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah, and Philip Grubauer is an RFA.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is an interesting question, just because you mentioned John Carlson. He's a right-handed shot, right? Is that correct? Do you think if he hits for unrestricted free agent market, Toronto makes him an offer?
Oh, yeah, for sure they make him an offer. I think they do over Tavares because their offense is already where it should be. They're already struggling to get guys into the lineup. Mm-hmm. And I take back my comments about Jake Gardner from last week. I think the Leafs should keep him. He has a great transition game. You take the good with the bad with him, and you don't get many 50-plus point defensemen. But John Carlson, I'm not sure how good he is defensively, but again, with the transition game and the offense with him, he is key. I wouldn't go for him if he's anything like 7.5. I wouldn't do anything 7.5 or over.
I agree with that.
If he's going for 7, then maybe like you can convince me on it, and I'd be perfectly okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, if it's between down to 7 and 7.5 for them making a deal, go 7.5. We're talking about $500,000 there. You're not even getting an entry level contract for that much.
That's true.
So, oh no. I think they definitely take a run at him. Who is the other free agent this year that I thought they maybe just I'll try and get a sneaky good offer in on 2018 NHL. I think it is, like, it might be Calvin DeHaan.
It was Calvin DeHaan. Definitely DeHaan.
Yeah, so I think they maybe make an offer on him, just see what they can get for him. Oh my god, Luke Shen's a UFA.
Just bring him back through the hell of it.
Roman Polak.
You could do that, yeah. I could see that.
I doubt Dubas will bring him back or want to bring him back if he's GM. Cody Franzen.
You could work out because you could take a lesser offer.
Calvin DeHaan is currently making $3.3 million. Mm-hmm. My guess is I don't see him getting much more than that. If it's anything north of 4.5, 4.75, that'll be an overpayment, I think, for a guy of his caliber.
I agree with that.
It's free agency. A team very well could overpay.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, this free agency isn't too great on defense other than John Carlson. You got Mike Green, but I don't think at his age, unless you're confident that he's going to keep up his level of play that he did this year, which he made a comeback year. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're assigning him for any real term. Toby Enstrom, same age. Lots of older guys.
Mm-hmm.
You got Francois Beauchemin. He's 37.
Yeah, I like that one. Good player, though.
Oh, my God. How hilarious would it be if they brought back Luke Shen the year they got rid of or lost JVR?
That would actually be hilarious. You know what? I think Shen could actually contribute to this team, believe it or not.
I haven't looked at his numbers, so I'm not able to speak for his defensive ability. He had 7 points in 64 games this year in Arizona.
Yeah.
Oh no, and who knows? Calgary could be looking to make a move. Mm-hmm. I've heard that. I think it was maybe TJ Brody was being looked at by some teams, so that may be a name you can get in on. I'm not sure who they'd offer, though, at this point, because you're not offering a roster player. They wouldn't take a defense for a defense.
Mm-hmm. Because and they're kind of looking to get forward.
Prospect cupboard's kind of cleared out right now, unless you're like trading Carl Grundstrom and... Oh, no, I know they're looking for another first, but...
Yeah. I don't think you're going to get that type of a player from Toronto right now, just because it's just like you were saying, they're not really available. And you're seeing Bozak go for sure. Bozak's gone. JDR.
He seems like a... Well, I think all of them are like this, include Bozak, Moore, JVR, Plekanec, Komarov are all gone. And same with Polak.
Yeah.
But I think Bozak might actually go to Vancouver.
I think that makes the most sense. Vancouver could definitely use a guy like Bozak right now. Especially with...
Like, they're going to be rebuilding for at least... I'm going to just be on the safe side, so anyone who's... really likes Vancouver isn't like, oh, you think we're going to be rebuilding? I think they're going to be rebuilding for at least another 2 years until they're in the sort of least position. Mm-hmm. That said, they could sort of fast track it. Pettersson could come in and like they could make the playoffs next year, but Bozak will, he might want to just make some cash because they have $14 million coming off the books with the Sedins, and then, you know what, he can center a line with either Pettersson or Besser, and then Horvat will center another, something like that, and he gets paid, he gets to play with some good players, and they get a guy that's got some experience, mm-hmm. and then maybe you can flip him in his last year, depending on what he has for term, and retain some salary.
Yeah, definitely. I think that works out well if you think about it. Like, it's a toss-up because, like, it all depends on turn two. But if you're rebuilding, I think you can afford the turn. And then, like, I don't think Vancouver is going to go under the salary cap, the minimum salary cap. But I think, you know, just to add Bozak there, I don't think it would hurt them. So I could see that happening for sure.
And what else was I thinking about?
Stick your line.
I had something in my head, but I can't remember it now.
Hey, it's exam season. I think exam and assignment season. I think we forget all about that.
Who do you think is going to be centering for the Leafs when Bozak leaves? It could be potentially Nylander. Mm-hmm. I seriously doubt that they go out and get like a big fish center free agent. And if your plan is to call up Miro Altonen or something, I think he looked good on the fourth line. He adds a little more skill to the fourth line. Potentially, he's a fringe fourth line player. My guess is as a career, just like a better option of Freddie the Goat. And he's been doing pretty well in the AHL this year, but he is still, I think, 24 or 25
yeah,
at this point. So it's not like, yeah, he's 24. He's not getting a whole lot better unless he's like a really late bloomer.
Yeah. Which it seems like that's less and less likely.
But like a fourth line with him, and let me just go through and think what the lines are going to be. Hyman, Matthews, Nylander, if Nylander stays on the wing. Marner, Kadri, Marlowe. Then it opens up. So third line could potentially be, let's say Nylander's at center. With Brown, with Kapanen and Janssen.
Yeah.
Then that puts Brown back on the top line with Hyman and Matthews, which he's played there before.
Yeah.
On that line. So that makes sense. And then that leaves a complete bottom line available.
That's kind of... I'm interested to see what happens there.
I think that's how Levo gets into the lineup eventually. I think they just need him to wait. And it's just... I think when he came out and say he asked to be traded or asked to play, I'm sure Lou is just like, just give it time, you'll get in.
Yeah.
Or something like that, because he knows they won't be able to afford JVR. He knows they won't be able to afford Bozak. Komarov they could afford, but I think it depends if he wanted to take a similar contract to what he's got now.
Yeah. I
love Komarov. I love him. I think it's time to move on from Komarov.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
And I guess at camp next year, see how Grundstrom's looking. If he needs time in the AHL or not. My guess is he will.
Yeah.
And Brocco will be able to develop sort of together. And, yeah.
See, that's the two guys I really want to keep my eye on. I like Brocco. I like him a lot. I watched him play in Kitchener. He has a lot of offensive upside.
Yeah, I watched him because I went to see a bunch of London night games versus the Kitchener Rangers because I'm a Knights fan. One of my good friends is a Kitchener Rangers fan.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to get out to a few of them. And yeah, he looks quite good. He found himself a little more in the second half this year.
Mm-hmm.
He had 32 points in 50 games, which is significantly better than what he had at the start of the season, which he was having he was struggling to start off strong.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also addressed too. That's his first year pro. He's getting scratched some games, and that's not because of his skill by any means. That's more because he's a rookie and that's what the coach sort of does.
Yeah, that's basically how they handle it.
And all the defense that they have in the minors right now.
Mm-hmm.
So they currently have Borgman, Hull, Jesper Lindgren, Andrew Nielsen, Callie Rosen, Martin Marinson is going to be gone. He's an RFA.
I'm with you on that. He's dirty.
And Jesper Lindgren only played four games, so I'm not even going to count him in that. What I see there is one sort of, and Timothy Liljegren, obviously, one sort of top-tier prospect with Timothy Liljegren. That will be an NHLer for sure. And then it's a good-looking defense down there, but what I think it is a bunch of good-looking fringe third pairing. It's like they're good for the AHL, and Borgman, my guess is Borgman and either Rosen or Nielsen will be the eventual third pairing.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I think once they get a little bit more playing time in the AHL, I think they would be a great third pairing. Like, they're not going to be, like, an amazing third pairing, but I think they would be great because they do have a lot of defensive upside. Their offensive, you know, that's good. They're both kind of stay-at-home. Nielsen's kind of like a two-way. Borgman's more of a stay-at-home defense than, you know.
I'm excited to see sort of Emilie Rasmussen.
Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be an interesting guy, in my opinion.
Because he's huge.
Yeah, he's like huge. Like 6'7", right?
6'7", 226 pounds.
That's damn.
He had 39 points in 66 games in his draft year. He's struggled a little bit this year, but that I think he's just gotten less minutes this year because Kingston is freakishly... Oh, no, he's still their top scoring defenseman. And they got Sean Day at the trade deadline, so that's obviously going to take away from his minutes.
Definitely.
He's had a rougher year, his second year, but... If he makes the NHL at the third pairing, I am quite happy with that because that means he's at least adequate or at very least decent enough to be in the NHL even on the Leafs roster. But he's 6'7", man. Like, I'm not unhappy with that draft pick at all. It's like, oh yeah, we'll take him 59th overall, see what happens. If something pans out, fantastic. We have this giant that shoots right-handed.
Something, like, it checks everything off what you want out of a guy. I think it was a great draft pick. And, yeah, he's going to take time to develop, but, hey, they got
this
time.
We're looking at, like, maybe 2020 for this guy is my guess at the earliest.
Yeah.
2020, 2021-ish.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I think he'll be decent, at very least.
I'm with you on that. He's like, I think he's an 83 at least, in like when it comes to like NHL 18 ratings. I'm excited to see how he plays. I kind of wish that he could develop quicker because you want to see the kid play, but Then again, maybe he's coming up, but the Maple Leafs are doing their Stanley Cup run.
Yeah, like, he's sort of a longer-term project, is what I see him as. But, yeah, like I said, if it's one of those ones that pan out, holy crap.
Yeah, you look like a genius. Our Lou looks like a genius. Just had to change the lettering around there.
Or Mark Hunter, I guess, would be, because he is usually the one doing the drafting.
Mm-hmm. That's true. But, like, yeah, that's true, because Lou gets him the it's kind of like, I wasn't really thinking about that. I was just like, TM does it. But it is kind of like back, I know this isn't hockey related, but Alex Anthopoulos always used to let his scouts do the drafting. Like, the Blue Jays, kind of the same thing here.
Do you have something you want to say?
No, like, actually, you know what? To finish this off, how do you think Thursday night's game goes?
I don't know. I think they felt happy to be at home again, so I feel like that could work in their favor. It's a toss-up every single game between these two. Could go either way.
All right, I'm with you on that, but I think Toronto's going to take it in overtime.
I'm going to say Toronto because I'm a Leafs fan, but...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See...
All right.
So,
thank you very much for listening.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, and please... If you do get time, check out Hockingwood, the novel. You can go to his website. We'll give you his Twitter, actually. So it's at Hockingwood, which is spelled HockeyWood novel, which is spelled NOV as in Victor EL. Check it out.
Yeah, it's like we said, goes to a good cause. Every dollar every book that you buy, a dollar goes to ending brain cancer. Hope you like this episode of Belief in the Magic with your hosts, Oscar Elioff
and Christian Holmes. Peace out, boys.
You're tuned in to Last Word Radio. Last Word on sports.com. And that is the last word.